Welcome to the Syntax Supper Club. Today with us, we have Connor Rogers and Corey LaVisca from Font Awesome. Font Awesome changed the game for icons back in the day, taking a process that was tedious and simplified it into just installing a font. Not only that, but it was the most funded and still the most funded and backed software Kickstarter of all time. Font Awesome is back. And they're back with Web Awesome. It's an open source library of web components that will work with any framework because it's based on web standards. So we're here today to talk all things Web Awesome. Welcome to the show, Corey and Connor.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah.
And real quick, before we get going, this show is brought to you by Sentry. It's the awesome place to find all of the bugs in your software. Head on over to sentry.io/syntax. Sign up and get 2 months for free. Wes.
Yeah. So let me tell the story of how this episode came about, because I think it's kind of interesting. So we just dropped our huge episode on UI components, UI frameworks, kind of like we talked about everything from headless to some styles to you just drop them in, you can work with them. And that show did really well. And there was lots of really good conversation around it. And like one thing I said during the episode, I was like, I mentioned probably 1,000 different libraries, but I'm probably not hitting them all. And I even told a bunch of people, like, please, like, pull request them to the show notes, because it's interesting to see them all. And one of the ones that we had talked about was Shoelace. And Shoelace is a web component-based UI framework that gives you everything from alert, badge, breadcrumb, dialogue box, details, date picker. And then, like, the next day, I was just talking about, like, the Sentry has this really cool date picker where you can, instead of having to select a range of dates, you can just say like 5 days. And Connor was like, yeah, like that's a very hard thing to do well accessibly. And we kind of talked back and forth about the frustrations around it and whatnot. And then I realized that he was the one working on Shoelace. And I didn't even realize that Font Awesome has sort of taken, I guess we can get the story from these guys, but Font Awesome has taken Shoelace under its wing or joined, or I'm not sure what the whole story is. I kind of waited till the podcast to get it, and it was raised $600,000 Canadian at least for this new framework thing. So this is awesome. So I think there's a lot to talk about here. So, like, first of all, Connor, Corey, you want to introduce who you are and what you do?
So yeah, again, thanks for having us. My name is Corey LaVisca. I created Shoelace a number of years ago, and it's been quite a wild ride. And more recently, as you said, we've joined Font Awesome to build it out into a sustainable open source project with a pro offer on top of that. And there's a ton of awesome stuff that we're doing over here. I originally created Shoelace back in 2017, and it was sort of an alternative to Bootstrap. Shoelace is actually a play on the name Bootstrap, if that's not super obvious.
I didn't know that.
No,
yeah.
It's not.
Cool. So, and it was basically,
I didn't even know that, to be honest. That's the first I knew about that.
Is a CSS framework where this was back where we still had IE11 to worry about, and custom properties were a thing, but they weren't really widespread at the time. And what I noticed was everyone was using Bootstrap, and Bootstrap was awesome because you could configure like one SAS variable and just everything would update. But nobody was doing that. Everyone was using it from the CDN. So all these websites had bootstrap.min.js and .css. But the problem was there'd be like 400 line CSS files to customize all these things. And it's like, why are we doing this? We have CSS custom properties. Shoelace was a very bleeding edge thing at first where, you know, you could set one CSS custom property and all of a sudden your brand color was everywhere. And that was sort of how it kicked off. And so it's always been a bit bleeding edge. Fast forward to about 2020, web components were a thing now and browsers were supporting them more widely. And I thought, you know, let's do 2.0. Let's just make it more than a CSS framework. Let's make it a web component framework, because then it can just work everywhere. We'll take all this bleeding edge stuff that we can't really use in production yet, which we can nowadays, but we couldn't then. And we'll continue that bleeding edge thing. Let's just see what the browsers can do. And so it was reinvented as a web component library. And we're now sort of transitioning it into a framework. But at the time, it was like, can I build all these components? Can I let people just load them all on a CDN, set a couple custom properties, get all their colors and everything else, and then still style them if they want to do overrides with CSS, if they want to, you know, what can the browser do? That's really what it's always been about. And so that's where we kind of landed, and it got kind of popular as browsers became more modern and evergreen. We just kind of started seeing more people use them and like the library. And yeah, that's sort of how it all kind of kicked off.
Nice. And Corey, yeah, so you've been working on Shoelace for quite some time. Connor, how did you arrive at Shoelace?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story how I got here. I'll give a little background of like how I even got into web dev in the first place. So yeah. I'm fully self-taught. I don't have any degrees to my name. So I worked as a paramedic for 8 years. So like I'd be like in firehouses or like, you know, at base, I'd be coding away. And I still remember, I don't know exactly how I got started with Shoelace, but I remember everyone was mentioning it, and I was like, wow, this looks really cool. This looks really nice. Everything is awesome. And this is probably around 2020, like probably around September, around that area. And I still remember I wrote the Rails docs for Shoelace and how to integrate it with Webpacker, which is like a special like wrapper on top of Webpack for Rails. I wrote it in the Brookline Fire Department firehouse on my birthday. I still remember it. I remember it clearly. A month later, I got hired for my first job, and like I backed off a little bit using it, but I still really enjoyed it for like personal projects. So I made PRs. I never really got into the whole React hype train. It just never like clicked with me. It really never was my thing, but I really enjoyed working with web components. And then, you know, I was making PRs, but like I was busy with my full-time job in Rails at this point. And then after that, the startup I was working for shut down about 9 months later. Stars aligned, long story short, I ended up getting hired at Microsoft working with Corey, and like that really, and we were working on an internal design system using web components similar to Shoelace. So that's how I got started in it. Was like, I just got pulled along with Corey, and I was like, I'm sticking to the bootstraps here and just hanging along the coattails.
Nice.
That's awesome. And so where you are today is that Fawn Awesome, which is like, I think probably everybody listening knows what it is, but Fawn Awesome absolutely changed the game for icons. I don't know, probably 10 years ago, where you load the script into your, or some CSS into your page, and then you just have an I tag with the class of FA and then FA dash whatever, and you get all these amazing icons, and it was just so much faster than everything. And quite honestly, I tweeted the other day, I'm like nothing has come close to the ease of Fawn Awesome is today. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily use that anymore, but Fawn Awesome, incredibly successful project, I think incredibly successful business. What's the story with them trying to now get into the web component and UI kit game?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. The thing I really love about being here is Fawn Awesome folks are very platform oriented, right? We see frameworks come and go. We see things come and go, trends come and go. And there's just a fundamental need for stability out there that we just haven't had on the front end. Everyone's fatigued. And when you look at, you know, I mean, React is a little sticky. I'll give it that. It does a lot of awesome things. It's very sticky. But even React sort of has its issues with like, well, you know, we started with class-based components. Now we move to hooks. Now we have this React server components. What are all these things? So there's even a little bit of instability there. And I think what people want is to be able to just use something that works and that continues to work for an indefinite amount of time. And the one thing that we can say with certainty is that the platform does that, right? I mean, Blink tags, they're deprecated. I think they still work in certain browsers. Marquee actually still works, even though that's been deprecated. But yeah. My point is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, your HTML still will render in a browser today. And so the platform to me was something that it just made a lot of sense, right? And that's where web components came in. Because I'll be honest, I created an app, I created a SaaS, and I wrote it in Vue 2, and it was just unfortunate timing because about 6 to 8 months later, Vue 3 came out, and it was enough of a breaking change for me that it was very frustrating. But not just that, there was a component library built into Vue 2 that used Vue 2. It was great. And when Vue 3 came out, that broke too. So not only did I have to upgrade my framework, I had to upgrade the component library. And oh, whoops, I wanted to be bleeding edge. I couldn't. The new version of that wasn't out yet. They didn't have a Vue 3 version. So I was kind of stuck on this. And I was like, how do we fix this problem?
Yeah.
I think framework churn is something that we're going to have to deal with. And I think that's maybe okay. But what if we start taking some of the lower level things like UI components and moving those off to the platform? Like if the component model shifts from Vue, React, Angular, shifts over to the platform, and we can start relying on that more, then when frameworks upgrade, which is natural, like frameworks are sort of a test of what can we do? Like, you know, platform takes time, frameworks are cutting edge. What if we had a way to reuse a lot of the fundamental stuff? Like that makes upgrading frameworks a lot easier, right? Why do we have to rebuild buttons every 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
To me, that
yeah.
didn't make sense. And that's sort of where the inspiration came from. How do we solve that problem?
And that tracks so much with what I've always been, you know, internally, it's like people always talk about how web components aren't great for building a whole app in. And that's a thing that web frameworks do really well. The routing, the you know, fast navigation, all of the things that you get from both frameworks and meta frameworks, that like the glue, the state, those types of things, passing props down, etc. But like the individual components, it makes so much sense to be able to take those from project to project. Not only that, but to not have to worry about, like you said, version updates, which are inevitable and will continue to happen. We talked about how many times we rewrote React code from class components, pure components, function components, hooks, all this stuff, and to arrive where we're at today. Just imagine if you could have brought along most of your components. It probably would have saved you a ton of time. So high-level view, let's talk about Shoelace and Web Font and Web Awesome and its relationship to each other. So Shoelace is awesome. We've been talking about it quite a bit on this show. How does Web Awesome relate to Shoelace? Are they the same thing? Is it an evolution? Is it a new project? What is that story?
Yeah, so we like to coin Web Awesome as the 3.0 version of Shoelace. Part of that is there's a tiny bit of concern because I named this project thinking like it's just going to be me and a couple random people on the internet using it. There happens to be a company that's involved in technology that is named Shoelace. So there's a little bit of worry there. But also when we joined Font Awesome, it kind of made sense to be a little bit more on brand. So there was a little bit of a double-edged thing there. But Web Awesome is a continuation of the project. We're cool. Doing the next major version. Longevity is something we care a lot about. We don't like to break things, but for this one release, we're going to be breaking some tag names, SL to WA for our prefix for our HTML tags. But that's really what it is. It's no different. It's the same project. It's the same people behind it. Actually, we have more people behind it. We have brilliant designers. We have the full resources of a very talented company that cares a lot about design and a lot about development, which is something that, you know, Web Awesome is taking Shoelace from a component library to a design system that you can pick up and customize by turning a few knobs and cool. just start building right away.
Just pop it right wow. in. So like Scott and I after this are recording a project on just getting up and running and doing a demo as quick as you possibly can, right? Because Scott and I all day long we're testing new APIs and like to the point where like we want a nice dev experience, but we also want to get up and running as fast as we possibly can. And like part of me misses that, like the days of Angular, you put a script in and you put some tags in the page and it picks it right on up. Font Awesome was the same way. So is the idea with the web components is that you can just pop it into, of course you can import them and NPM install them and whatnot, but is that the idea is that like if I want a good date picker for a quick demo that I'm doing, I could just pop this thing in and I'm up and running?
I want to let Connor answer that, but before I do, I want to say that we're still working on that date picker. That is the like the holy grail of web components.
Oh, yes.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It is a little bit tricky, but we are working on that, and I think we're committed to getting that in there soon.
Okay. Man, awesome.
That is a tough.
I shouldn't have used that as the example because there's what? How many other components that you have?
Yeah, I think 40? I think we're technically just about 50-ish right now.
Yeah.
I've lost count. It's there's a lot.
A particular favorite of mine is the drawer component. I love that one.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
Like a drop down. Like, do you have like a filter drop down? That's a one that is commonly used. Is that coming?
I think we will soon.
Yeah, that's a combo box at that point.
Okay,
but yeah, the filtering and all of that fun stuff, date pickers, they're really hard to get right accessibility wise.
Oh, yeah.
They're not easy. And like, that's our goal, is to make these as accessible as possible while still being easy to use. But the other thing is like getting started. We understand that, right? People want to like get started quickly. People want to move. Like, that's why the default installation method is a script tag to JS deliver and then a link tag with our CSS custom properties. And then you're off and running. That's like the goal of the project, get you up and running. Then if you want to like, you know, come back and get like only the components you want, because right now with the autoloader, it will, like, the autoloader is going to be the default in 3.0, spoiler alert, by the way. Like, right now, the default will load every component. With the autoloader, it loads components as it detects the tags. But, like, the goal is you're still going to incur some cost of importing every component, but it's not going to register everyone right away. But the goal is really how quickly can you get this set up? And then afterwards, you can optimize, right? Only import the components you want, import pieces here, there. But, like, at the end of the day, we want people to get a prototype up quickly, and then they can move from there, optimize from there, benchmark, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Can you go just a little bit like more high level for people who may have never used Shoelace before, what the autoloader is?
Yeah. So the autoloader is basically like, if you have a mutation observer on the page that just listens for any time a new element is added or whenever the page is loaded, it will run a query selector for all possible Shoelace components. And then if it detects a Shoelace component, it will register it with the custom elements.define API. That's in its simplest form. It's really just a, you know, beefed up mutation observer.
Nice. Awesome. So you just drop in a script and it hashtag just works.
That's the goal, right? In theory.
Yeah.
I'm curious about where Web Awesome fits in the like the categories that we talked about on that last episode. You know, like you, on one side of it, you have like the React Aria functions, which is simply just a set of hooks, bring your own divs. And then all the on the other side, it's like full components that look awesome and they're up and running. Where does this fit?
I could take that one. So Shoelace, Web Awesome, sorry. Name changes are hard, right? The goal is to be a full design system similar to like the, I would say React Spectrum is the implementation of React Aria.
Okay, cool.
The goal is to be the whole design system implementation. We don't really offer too many like low-level hooks to like build your own. Some people do. There's a few design systems that have straight up forked Shoelace and, you know, are using the internals of our stuff. But like as a whole, the goal is when you use Shoelace, you have a full design system at your disposal. And with Web Awesome, now we're going to be getting theming and other things coming along to make the process of customizing a site a lot easier. So you don't end up with bootstrap syndrome where everything looks the same.
That's good. Cause that's always the frustration is that you put all this work, especially like if you're putting all this work into accessibility, that was the one thing is like, there's not a React Aria for everything else, you know, like there are components here and there, but there's not an implementation that is that good in other frameworks. So if Web Awesome can be that and give us these primitives, but still give us the flexibility of like being able to style it. And maybe that's my next question is like, what does the styling game look like? Because like one of the frustrations that people have with web components is that web components is a separate DOM. And if you want to be able to reach in there and A, modify the outputted HTML, or B, be able to add classes and style it a little bit differently, it can be a little bit limiting. So what does that look like?
This goes back to that bleeding edge concept. When we say web components, I always thought that it was a bad name because everyone thought, oh, it's a web component. It must be like a React or Vue component. It's not really the case. I like custom elements better because it is just a custom HTML element. The thing about the shadow DOM is, yeah, there's a little black box in there. And it's a blessing and a curse because as authors of custom elements, we can expose certain things. We can do parts, we can do custom properties, and we call that our public API. You want to style these things, use that. And I think people have gotten so accustomed to just taking a component and they can manipulate the HTML however they want. And they like that freedom. And it feels good sometimes, but the problem with that freedom is you can also break things and you can also mess up accessibility really easy. So the black box where it becomes a blessing is we handle all that hard stuff for you. If you stick to the public APIs, it's a little different from what you're used to, but it's still fully capable of doing all the customizations that you're looking for, you just have to do it a little bit differently, like the CSS part selector that most people seem to not really be aware of yet. And over time, as these become more and more ubiquitous, that's going to become a lot more common. Like, that's just going to be something that you learn in CSS. Oh, it's a part selector. Which parts are available? Oh, here's the docs. That's how I style that. It's just, it's, there's been a lot of friction there. And so one of the things that we're doing, because Shoelace was traditionally very like, okay, use the parts, target the parts, style those things however you want. And now we're moving to something, because there's been so much friction, that we're exposing more custom properties. That's something that people are a lot more comfortable with these days. Mm-hmm. You know, they know how those work. They feel good about it. They didn't maybe 5-6 years ago, but they do now. And I think in mm-hmm. another 5 to 6 years, parts are going to be just like that. And so you can have your cake and eat it too. We're going to make it easier, because that has been a little bit of a pain point. But it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means it's different from how you're used to doing it.
Can you tell us really quickly, for people who have never used part, like, explain like I'm five, what exactly that is in CSS?
Yeah, so it's quite fascinating. When I say shadow DOM, you know, a custom element is what we like to call a host element, right? And everything inside of that host element, if it uses shadow DOM, that's that little black box. And we can control the structure as authors of that, and we can expose certain things and hide certain things from our consumers. And so the things that we expose, that's called our public API. That's the stuff that we're not going to break, right? From whatever version, we're not going to break that. You can rely on that, just like semantic versioning, right? A major version, we may change it, but minors and patch versions, you can rely on that. And so parts are where we have a certain structure inside a custom element that we say, hey, this particular div or this particular header or this particular thing inside here, this element is called, you know, part equals whatever. And it's just an attribute. We give it a name. And in CSS, you can use a, you know, :: part, parentheses, but then you target it that way. And then you just use regular CSS properties, right? So with a custom property, you can expose those go right through shadow DOM. They're designed to just kind of penetrate that. But with parts, we actually give you a specific element inside of that black box and say, style it however you want to. Mm-hmm. Whatever properties you want to apply, have at it.
Nice.
Awesome. And I think one more thing we should probably say to the audience as well, especially if they didn't listen to the episode with Brad Frost on design system. The reason why we are so stoked about web components is that we don't need a React version of, we do actually. React is one of the few frameworks React's where you do need a one for every single one. And Shoelace does make it work with React. But the idea that if you have a large company, I have a friend who works at a local bank. They have 1,000 developers. They got 3 Angular apps, 6 React apps, 3 Vue apps, and they have a design system that needs to work across the board. And either you're doing a whole bunch of work re-implementing that in every single one, and you got to make sure the accessibility is bang on and it looks exactly the same, and the same thing happens when you hit escape twice and all the components. That's a ton of work. Or you can just do that once in web components, and you can very easily use web components in these different frameworks or write adapters that will sort of handle them. And that's huge for, amongst the other benefits we talked about, that's huge for companies that want to be able to port things from framework to framework or design system to different projects that they're working on.
Yeah. And the big reason why I like DOM first frameworks, right? Frameworks that use the DOM. There's a reason why that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, Wes, it's interesting that you mentioned design systems and how all this fits in, because custom elements are like a natural progression of where people want to be. I actually got into this whole thing, and the reason that Shoelace 2.0 with web components came about was because I was working at a company where we had a problem. We had Angular, we had a little bit of React, we had some folks that were just rogue doing vanilla everything, and they had 3 to 4 implementations of different components, and one design team that said, hey, like, you know, your button should look like this, all your panels should look like that. And so that's actually what my first journey into web components was. How do we solve this problem? How do we make all these things consistent? And that's where it all kind of started. And, you know, back then it was very early. We were using polyfills left and right. IE11 was still a concern, mm-hmm. but that's where it all kind of kicked off. And it clicked to me, like, but why do this at every single company? Maybe we could do this at a much higher level in an open source way and let people just kind of take these components and run with them, just like their HTML elements.
Yeah, we all love and use HTML elements. They're super handy for us. What if we had more of them? And they were great. So that's really web components, right? And that's I think, where it fits in super well here. So yeah, this is kind of a dream project for me. I'm stoked to see you guys pick this up.
One question I have while we're talking about like HTML elements as well is like, what are your thoughts on the sort of the new stuff that's happening with the Open UI initiative? So anyone listening, Open UI is a working group that's got together and they've been researching and writing proposals for new inputs. Like, there's a reason why nobody uses input type of date in the browser, because it sucks, you know, like it doesn't look good. You have no control over it. So a lot of the new ones, popover API, we already saw, there was an initial implementation of combo box and select box. It's being revised right now due to some feedback from WebKit. So like these APIs are so much more flexible, where like they allow you to use multiple parts together and you can build your own custom filterable multi-select combo box. And it's just, it's awesome seeing that type of thing. And like, obviously those are two. You guys have what, 50 and are still working on new ones. We're a long ways from that type of thing. But will you use these browser APIs or maybe the polyfills when it comes time to using these types of things?
Yeah, so this is actually the thing I'm most excited for about WebAwesome, the 3.0 version, is we get to move a lot of this stuff that we were doing with bespoke implementations. We have this focus trap API that I have had many headaches and nightmares about for our dialogue. It's a monster, right? And like, we get to move over to a dialogue element now that just handles it for us. And whatever they do, we can be like, this is what the browser does, right? It lets us offload a lot of complexity and a lot of issues with cross-browser support and everything. New popover API means we get to remove, hopefully once it becomes more stable and we get anchored regions in CSS too. That's the other thing too, is we get all the benefits of CSS and HTML. Yeah. So like, the new anchored region stuff coming out means we get to get rid of floating UI, which, awesome library, by the way. Floating UI, if you're building any drop downs, combo boxes, whatever, anything that is not absolutely positioned somewhere, floating UI is absolutely the best.
Never seen this.
We get to get rid of that and let the browser do it for us. So like, I'm actually most excited about the things we're removing in WebAwesome, because we get to use browser APIs that, you know, maybe we didn't get around to in 2.0 because it'd result in breaking changes and other things. So that's what really excites me, is as these advances come along, we just get to plug them in and we get the benefits from it.
Yeah, imagine that you can spend your time on things that are more interesting, more fun components than having to worry about implementation details and an API that sucks in the browser. Yeah.
I have a question that I posed last episode about this as well, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. So you have a popover, like a dialog box that pops up, and in that you have a form element.
Oh, yeah.
And as you are typing in an input, you hit the escape key. What happens? Does it clear the suggestion, or should it close the entire modal box? What are your thoughts?
I can tell you right now what we do. We clear the suggestion, because we check the path of the events when it's an escape key like that. And we check if you're inside of like inside of a input button text area. I think there's a couple of content editable.
I wrote that exact code. Yes.
Yeah. And we use compose path too. So it also checks like if it's in a shadow DOM somewhere too.
Nice.
So it just does a quick find to make sure you're not on any of these like tags that you shouldn't be, that has its own escape key functionality. So to me, you don't close the dialog if you're inside of a interactive field.
Little did you know that was going to be an answer or a question with a right and wrong answer, and you got it correct. So,
well, we actually take it a step further, and this, the cool thing about it is the platform is always evolving, and so normally you have to do all these checks, and we're very early, but there is an API for handling exactly that, called CloseWatcher API. And this has already been implemented. And it's I don't think it's in any of the evergreen like live browsers, but I think it might be in some of the canaries at this point. But we're ready for that. Like, so we're looking for these new things. Like, can we get rid of all this extra code to do all these checks and just use the browser's APIs? And that's a huge part of what we believe in, is like, can we get rid of more code and just focus more on, like what we said earlier, just the components, just the styles? How do we make this your design system and get rid of the cruft and just give you all the good stuff and let you focus on that?
Wow, CloseWatcher is proof that like Wes and I spend all day, every day looking at this stuff, and I've never heard of this API.
Like I said, bleeding edge.
This was a PR. I don't know if you guys know Luke Warlow. He does a lot of platform work for Agalia. It's mm-hmm. like they do like open source. They're like big proponents behind like the open UI stuff. He's the one who did the PR for CloseWatcher for us, and that's how I found out about it. So he's the one who actually showed us. Yeah. Wow. Luke is like my go-to for like all these strange, bizarre browser behavior stuff. I'm just like, Luke, is this supposed to happen?
Yeah, he's a high quality Twitter follow. Luke_Warlow, Warlow. Big fan. That's awesome. Because like yesterday, I found a bug in the Syntax website. We have a share dialogue and we use, is it dialogue or popover that we use, Scott?
We use both.
Okay. We've had
for like that a pop-up. In particular, I think it's dialogue.
I think it was dialogue. Yes. So we opened it and we have a Boolean of if it's open or not. And if you click the X, it sets a Boolean and hides it. But then if you hit the escape key, it actually closes the dialogue box. So I was finding out that if you hit the X, it hit it visually, but didn't actually close it. So I had to write a little bit of code that I just moved it over to the on close event, and I was like, browser standards, you know, like you take code out of the code base. There's no, you don't need the Boolean of if it's open or not. You simply just use the browser methods to open, close, check if it's open, all that good stuff.
Let's talk about Kickstarter really quick, because it's funny. Kickstarter is one of those platforms that I think a lot of people, I don't know, it felt like it was popular, I don't know when, maybe about the time that like, what was that, Groupon was popular, right? It's like of that era, but it still gets a massive amount of traffic and it's still like a very widely used website, but maybe people don't think about it as much as they used to. I'm interested in, well, one, the Kickstarter has been extremely successful. And by the time this comes out, it will come out on April 19th. So your Kickstarter will still be going.
At least it'll still be going.
If you're listening to this and you want to support, we'll have links to that and you'll still have time to hop in. I hopped in on one of the early bird tiers a week ago or so. I want to know a little bit about the decision to launch on Kickstarter and how that's been.
You know, that decision goes back to the Font Awesome 5 Kickstarter, I think, where, you know, that's the Kickstarter like record for software. That's the most earned. There's two records, and I'm not as good at off the top of my head here, but it's the most amount funded, I think, and maybe it's the most number of backers or something like that.
Yeah,
so there's some records.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So there's some records to be had there, and that's just phenomenal. Like I think you know that Font Awesome 5 video was just awesome, and so we just kind of wanted to relive that, I guess. And I'm really glad to be a part of it because we actually got to go out to Los Angeles back in August, film this whole new video that, you know, that's on there. And it's just a heck of a time, right? But the cool thing about that is you're telling a story. You know, yes, it's a pre-sale, we're selling a product, but we're telling a story about how we turn this free thing into something that's still free and even better, but also we add a lot more to it, and how you can be a part of that. So it's really, I think it's one of the best platforms, maybe not for software, but it works for Font Awesome apparently, but for most software, I don't think it works as well for whatever reason. I don't know why exactly. But it's just something that we seem to connect with and vibe with, and our followers seem to kind of appreciate that. And you know, we can add swag, we get all sorts of things to it. So it just kind of works for some reason for us.
Yeah. Do you think that the success of the Font Awesome Kickstarter directly impacted the success of the Web Awesome one?
I absolutely think it helps. Yeah, right. Because people are familiar. Another piece of that helps is Font Awesome was this open source thing, right? And then they how do we keep the lights on? That's always a common story in open source, and that was how that was what made it all possible. You know, now there's a company. Now we have, you know, employees. We have all these things that we could do with it and keep making it better. And, you know, open source has been a struggle. I've launched a number of open source things that fizzled out. And it's like, you give away a lot of free time, a lot of effort. And when you try to put a price tag on, you're immediately like a sellout. And we didn't want to send that message. I very particularly didn't want to send the message of like, hey, I want your money now. Like, I'm flipping switches off. Give me money. That's crappy. I want to give stuff away, but I also want to eat. I want to feed my family. I think we all kind of share that in open source. And this was a path that has been proven. And my decision to join Fawn Awesome when you know, we started talking about this and how things would work, they have a good track record of open source, right? Like, they've added tons and I think it's been like thousands of icons to the free version of Fawn Awesome. And we plan on doing something similar with Web Awesome, where, or, you know, Shoelace is now Web Awesome, where we're going to be adding a lot more of the free stuff. But to keep us being able to do that, we need to start offering other things that are above and beyond that. So it's, you know, it's a replay of that. I don't know how else we would do it. I think it's clearly it's working. So that's the good news.
Yeah. Man, do you have any idea of what the, like, I don't know if it's called the premium inputs are going to be, or premium components are going to be, but like, there's been many times where I'm happy to shell some money out to stop the pain of certain areas of dev.
Yeah. One thing we don't want to do is lock away like the best stuff, because like, you know, if we lock away the best stuff, nobody's going to use it. We're just giving away garbage. We want to give away some of the best stuff, but then some of the really complex stuff, like I'm going to toss it over to Connor here to talk about that stuff. But like, some of the more complex components, those are the things that we're putting in pros. Some of the stuff where there are companies dedicated to selling like these specific components, these are things we're adding to pro. So we're not trying to just put a price tag on everything. We're trying to put a price tag on the things that you'd probably be paying for anyways.
Yeah.
Connor, you should talk about the rich text editor stuff.
Yep. I knew that was coming. Yep. The rich text editor. That's a big one.
No one wants to build a rich text editor.
Yeah.
and if you look at rich text editors out there, they have awful licenses. They are exorbitantly expensive. It's like you're either an enterprise and paying for this, or you're just not getting a rich text editor. And the licenses are like, you can't even modify source. It's not even like copy left. It's just like what we give you is what you get. This is all you get, nothing more, and pay us a lot of money every year. So I actually have built a rich text editor for Rails using TipTap, which is built on top of Prose Mirror, which is like pretty much like probably the best text editor library out there.
It's great.
There's also some new ones. It's from Facebook. I think it's Lexical is a new one. It's a lot smaller than Prose Mirror. It's probably about a third of the size. So like, there's a lot of libraries out there, but it's really hard to get it all together well. And the UI is really where rich text editors are so hard. There's so many icons. And like, how many of you have used a rich text editor with just an awful table editor inside of it?
Yeah, or the paste, just the paste alone, you know? And I've seen code that like a paste does, like tiny MCE, something like that. I do not envy anyone working on that. That's hard stuff.
Yeah, it's rough too, because browsers actually all handle paste slightly differently. Like, depending on the age of the browser, you only get certain things with paste. And then on top of it, like, Safari is a lot more security focused when you paste. So you don't always get all the information. So you have to have a bunch of like try catches and like backfills. And like, you know, you just progressively work your way down from what you get from the browser, which may not always be the same in Chrome versus Safari versus Firefox. So it's really tough to get right. And there's a reason why there's not tons of these out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, even like, I know people that make a living on like image file upload, you know, upload the file, resize it, whatever, mark it up, and then send it along its way. There's just so many little, I was just looking at Widgmo was the big one back in the day. I'm just looking up how much it is. $800 per developer per year. It's a big business. And like, data grids are huge, where
data grids
some
are huge.
Stock trading company needs to be able to filter a list of stocks and have it update every 6 milliseconds. And it's a wild world that these businesses are out there. And I'm glad to see it, because it obviously, like, Fawn Awesome can sell like icons. They sold $1 million worth of icons on Kickstarter alone. And they're able to like hire you guys to work on this type of stuff. Like, that's beautiful.
I mean, the thing is, when you look at it, like Corey said, some of these components that we have planned for Pro, like, they're Pro because these are legitimately full business components, right? Like data visualization, right? Like, who here is paid for, what's it, high charts is the big one, right?
Yeah.
High charts and everything. Exactly, right? Like, you know, that's $100,000 a year, depending on your size, right? Like, then there's also, so that you have data viz, and then you have rich text editors, data grids, another one, AG grid. Who's used AG grid, right? Like, things massive. Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Like, these, the fact that these are all in one component set, and they're all using the same styles, some same consistency, that's like the big sell of, like, we can't legitimately give away some of these for free because there's so much time, effort, and everything spent into these. And we're happy to give you primitives, right? Like, you know, the selects and the even date picker is a little iffy, but like the thing is, these more complex ones, data grid, data visualization, rich text editors, like that's just really hard to give away for free because of the fact that these are full businesses alone.
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking at your goals, the stretch goals. So you guys destroyed your goals, and now you're on the stretch goals. And I was seeing that the $500,000 stretch goal was the charting package in WebAwesome, and I wanted to say, are you sure that you want to do that?
Because I knew that was coming.
Packages are so hard; they're no fun.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We've had some internal discussion about that. And I don't know if it was that we're just crazy or if we think that we didn't think we were going to get this far. And I think it's inevitable. We're looking like we're going to be building some charts soon.
Nice.
That's the thing though. Like Connor said, like we're building the more complex things and those are things we're charging for. But there's another curious thing about FontAwesome that I always personally thought, like, they are a little bit underpriced for what they offer. And so if I'm going to take an open source project and join a company and sell out, as a lot of people would say, I want to make sure that they have, you know, we're doing this in good faith and that we're not going to be charging people ridiculous prices. We don't want to box people out. Like, if you're paying for something, you know, make it very reasonable, almost stupidly reasonable, to where you can't not pay for it. Like, you can't justify trying to build any of this stuff yourself.
Yeah.
But when it comes to charts, yeah, we're going to be busy.
Yeah,
we are.
And that's a, you know, I mean, the amount of, to be clear, the amount of things that you're getting for free here are outrageous. And the goals when you're contributing on Kickstarter, do you want to go over maybe a little bit about like what you're giving away if you do contribute to this project and why might somebody want to donate to this?
Yeah, I see it more as a pre-sale. And I don't want to sound very markety here. That's not the intent, even though that's what we're talking about. But one thing that FontAwesome did, and that we're continuing that pattern here, is if you're an early backer and you do this, you get that price for life, right? We're not gonna be like, oh, first year and then you pay full price. So we really appreciate the people that are out there that believe in us, that say, hey, we're gonna put our money here and trust in you to bring us all this awesome stuff, right? Because we have a lot built. We don't have it all built yet. We're still doing some of this stuff. So there's a lot of trust there. And so that's our way of saying thanks. Like, if you get in now, we're gonna honor that for the life of your subscription. So the rewards are pretty much that. You know, you're an early backer. You're gonna get a price that no one else is ever gonna get. Bragging rights, I guess, is a good one there.
That's great. Have you guys ever dipped into drag and drop? I've been following Alex Reardon. I think he wrote React Drag and Drop, and then he just released Pragmatic Drag and Drop. And it's just, I watched a whole talk of him. I was like, this guy probably knows the most about drag and drop in the entire world.
I don't know that we have anything planned for it, but I've been following for a while. It was React Beautiful D&D, I think it's called.
Okay.
React Beautiful Drag and Drop. And it's all under Atlassian, Atlas Kit. I forget what the
Atlas
package
kit.
Scope
yeah,
is.
AK yeah. Kit. And it's called Pragmatic Drag and Drop now.
Yeah, and so the original, obviously, React Beautiful D&D was under, it was only React, right? And this Pragmatic one is the, like, latest. This is, like, brand new. This is, like, a week ago he
brand
released
new.
It.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know when this is going to air, but, like, this is, like, fresh off the press. And I've seen some of the demos of it, like, dragging across iframes and stuff, and you have to, like, change the opacity while you're dragging to be able to drag across iframes or drag from one browser to another, and then you get, like, a data transfer event. Like, it's there's a lot there. And, you know, I think if we ever do anything with drag and drop, we're probably just going to pull that package in and wrap it in some nice way, because it is challenging.
I'm curious how that, do you know how that works? Because it works with React, Svelte, Vue, Angular, and so on. So is that, is it web components, or is it just a bunch of DOM code that has to be surfaced?
I haven't looked into it. I'm assuming it's DOM code that has to be surfaced, because I haven't seen anything that points to anything else. My best guess is they probably do something with like the draggable attribute or something, and then have like a mutation observer with like an attribute filter for it. That'd be my best guess. I don't know 100%. I haven't even had time to look into it yet. And like, this package has excited me for so long, but like, it's so new, I haven't even looked in. And there's, it's a big package, because it has wrappers for, like you said, Svelte, Vue, React. So it's like, there's, it's a big code base, but like the core of it is pretty tiny as well.
Cool.
We can talk about the layout component at the $1 million mark. That's been, you know, my living misery for the last year of my life.
Yeah. What's the layout component?
Yeah, so the layout component is like a culmination of me staring at tons of websites and seeing what like the general layout of most of these websites are. And I originally built one at Microsoft on their original design system, but it was very like stripped down. It was, this is the way we're going to do it. There's no other permutations of this. This is it. And even that took me like a solid 4 months of like, how do I get this right? How do I make this extensible? How do I make this in a way that like, if somebody needs to break out, they can break out. And then I got hired into Web Awesome after I had been, they pulled me off of the design system working with web components to do a bunch of AI stuff. Cause this is like, you know, sometime had to have been around June or so. I think June is when I actually joined. So it would have been before then. So like at the start of the new year, they're like, oh yeah, you're going to work entirely with AI now and do LangChain. So I came over to Web Awesome. Yeah. It was not my cup of tea. I just didn't enjoy the work, right? Like I enjoyed building with web components. So I came over to Web Awesome and I'm like, all right, cool. And then they're like, all right, we have this layout component to build. And I was like, well, I've done that before, but now it's a lot more challenging, where anyone can put whatever layout they want, right? Like I'm no longer restricted to this is the Microsoft way of layout. So it was really challenging. And even the docs on it are challenging, because it's abstract enough to where, you know, we have a bunch of, at its core, it's simply a couple resize observers and some slots that let you slot into certain places. And, you know, it's pretty stripped down in that sense. You have sticky sidebars if you do like the Holy Grail layout, where you have like the three column center and then a header above, footer below. Like that's like the ideal scenario for it. But like there's other things we want to do, like you write your navigation once and it can like move into bold spots, and you don't have to write your navigation, like all your top header links can then move into a drawer or fly-in panel that comes in from the left once you get to a certain breakpoint. And so that's really like the challenge of it, was supporting all these different ways to build, having the ejection mechanisms for most layouts, and like seeing what most sites did. And like, there's even challenging things around, like you have to calculate the height of the header, and then you want like the two sides of the main content. So like, if you have that three column, the two side columns, you want those to be sticky, because you don't want those moving with like the main page as you're scrolling down, like in a doc site, right? Like it's the worst when you're in a documentation site and you have to scroll down to be able to scroll the sidebar. So you lose like your main content area, and like you're trying to find where you want in the side navigation menu. Like it's challenging, because then you need to, like with the sticky, you need to calculate like how big's our header and make sure that you're like sitting below that. So you know, like the amount of like, I think it's margin or the top is what you said on it. So it was really hard to build.
I think the point Connor's trying to make is layouts are really hard. And a lot of the components that we're building are just as hard. And I like to think of it like, from a design system engineer perspective, it's easy to build a component for a specific use, but it's really hard to build a component that can just work in as many places as possible and maintain the ability to customize, maintain the ability to do exactly what you need with it.
Yeah, especially if that's the goal, right? The goal is to be able to use these wherever and all over the place. I had a question that was a little bit fun here that we can have as maybe the last question before we wrap up. What are both of your favorite components to both use and work on? And I'm going to say, not counting the rich text editor, since we already talked about that one.
Go ahead, Connor.
You got to give me a sec. I'm not even sure what my favorite is.
What's been the one that you're excited to work on or build?
I'm excited to work on ComboBox. I've started it in some free time, but like ComboBox is like a really hard one to get right, but everyone uses them, everyone loves them.
Yeah.
So ComboBox really excites me. As for my favorite, I feel like my favorite may be, I would say probably Drawer is my favorite, because I feel like I use that all the time for like small, like once you get down to the small viewport sizes, it's great to just be able to have all your links come in with it. I think that one is fantastic.
For me, it would probably be Dialog. Weird, because dialogs on the web are kind of eh, but there's a good purpose if you use them right. And it's not the version that you see in Shoelace today. It's the version you're going to see in Web Awesome, which is where we actually move to the actual dialog element and we get to scrap all that code we talked about earlier, because it visually looks the same. But every time I click that button and I see that dialogue, I know that we've been able to remove so much garbage code that we don't want to have put in there for focus trapping and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it just comes natural. So, you know, it's sort of that appreciative. We appreciate the platform for what it continues to let us remove from our library.
Nice. Sick.
Awesome. Let's get into the next section, which is shameless plugs and sick picks. Do you guys come prepared with a sick pick?
We did.
What do you got for us?
Yeah, I'll go first. So I don't know if you guys know about the enhanced.dev by Brian LaRue and his team over there. And Begin, I don't know. There's a lot more to it.
We've had Brian on the show. He's probably one of we've had very few guests on more than once. And I think we've had Brian on 3 times now. Big fan.
Yeah. So they just released their SSR module to be able to run across any server. So like if you have like a PHP server, or you have a Rust server, whatever the case may be, they released their SSR module. And I was diving in yesterday. I was so excited. It was just released yesterday. And I was so excited to dive in. And I was like, what are they doing here? And there is a fantastic package underneath that's powering it all called XStism. And XStism is like a WASM library that allows you to package up a library that you're using written in like Rust or something, Rust C, whatever the case may be, and then run it in these other runtimes like a JavaScript, Ruby, etc. So XStism.org, fantastic. It's a super exciting project for WASM. Oh,
that's cool. So basically, if you have an app that needs JavaScript to run, but you are using a Python server, it's pretty common use case, right? Like if somebody in Ruby or someone in Python, someone in PHP world, sometimes you need JavaScript server tools, because that's what most tools are built in. So you can bundle it up for WASM, but then XStism will allow you to run it on these different platforms. That's sweet.
Yep, exactly. Nailed it.
I'm so excited about all this WASM stuff. Like every time we talk about it, I'm just like giddy.
So I've been thinking about how to do SSR with web components forever, right? And like the thought I'd always come to was like, you need like a static template, you need like a universal templating language. And I'm like, once I see WASM, I was like, wow, this makes so much sense. Like it's just string in, string out, end of the day, add some data and, you know, some context essentially, right? And you string in, string out, right? Like that's the easy goal.
String in, string out. I like that.
Yeah, it's a common theme with the SSR story and web components that you hear from, especially like the React crowd, where, you know, they just plug in Next and everything just works for them. You know, somebody's done that hard work already, and with the platform, things take longer. And, you know, are we there yet with the SSR story? It's like, that's the last remaining thing that people seem to be like, I don't want to use them because SSR. Well, we're so close to having that solved. And I feel like after yesterday's announcement with that package and with the work that we're doing on our side to make this happen, like we're going to disprove all of that. I mean, SSR is going to be a non-issue. And there's just at that point, there's really no reason why you wouldn't want to start thinking about custom elements.
Nice. Corey, sick pick.
So my sick pick is going to be Lit. And the reason is, not just because we use it, there's a reason why I used it. Shoelace didn't start with Lit. It started with Stencil. And then eventually I was like, how can I make this slimmer? Like, you know, I want to make it as thin and close to the platform as possible. Started rolling my own library. Yeah, that was kind of dumb, but I did. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I was kind of just building Lit, and the size almost matched up too once I added all the features that I wanted. And so I really appreciate the work that they've done over there. Justin Fagnani and the team over there at Lit that has just made this the like de facto. I mean, there's a lot of great libraries out there, not to take away from them, but for me, Lit has been like the de facto. If I'm gonna roll, especially a collection of web components, it's gonna be with Lit, because I tried and I cannot make a smaller library than what that does to create these with the tools and the abstractions that I prefer to have. So lit.dev.
Nice. Sick. We'll get that linked up. We've had Justin on the show too. Lit is an awesome project. Definitely check it out. Yeah.
I'd love to add on to that too. There's also, so it's actually broken up inside of Lit. There's Lit Element, which is like the web component wrapper. And then there's Lit HTML. And Lit HTML is such a fantastic way to write tag template literals. I know Frontend Master uses it. Like, you don't need Lit for web components because you have Lit HTML if you want to just write some JS HTML. You know, it's such a fantastic library. So much of it is, it just feels like you're writing HTML. It doesn't feel like, you know, you're writing some bespoke dialect.
Yeah. And I to add on to that, if you're writing HTML on the server and you're not using like a JavaScript framework or whatever, building out templates, building out anything with HTML, man, it's super simple. Like you said, to use that template tag literal, you get access to all JavaScript. You can do your loops and all that stuff inside of there. So it's really, really pretty sick.
And maybe now we're going to get signals. Actually, that's one question I didn't even ask you, is like, what are you, I don't care, it's my podcast, we can ask it. What are you doing for like internal state, right? You gotta sometimes you have to hold data inside of these components, I assume. What do you use for that?
I can answer this. So so we just use Lit's base wrapper. So Lit has this idea of properties, right? So these properties, at the end of the day, they're really like wrappers with getters and setters. Yep. So like if Lit ends up using signals under the hood, then we get that benefit for free. But Lit kind of has its own like state management in a way. And it keeps tracks of what properties change as well. So you have like this will update hook in to see like what properties are changing so you can update certain things. So we largely just use what Lit gives us.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah, that's for low-level stuff, right? As things start to grow, and I don't think custom elements are there, like web components are there as a community where you have like a web component-based framework, right? You start talking about state management, you're talking about actually building apps right now.
Yeah.
We're building lower level stuff where that's not quite as relevant. But I do see as people start to realize this is a really good component model. It's interoperable. It works everywhere. How can we make that better? My theory is frameworks are going to pick up on that. In enough years, we're going to start seeing a pivot to where they're like, yeah, you know, it might be the Svelte, it might be the Preact, it might be the whatever version of custom elements that you're building. But at the end of the day, they're custom elements. Now mm-hmm. the frameworks start to focus less on component models and more on things like routing and state management and stuff, the things that where they're really going to shine. So I think that's mm-hmm. where we're going to go with it. But I do want to say, I think Lit has an experimental, the Lit Labs, I do believe they have an experimental signals package. Largely influenced by Preact already, that's out there. Pretty sure I've seen that.
Preact one is influential for sure. We'll have a link to the Kickstarter, so you'll still have some time if you're listening to this to support the Kickstarter. I highly recommend you do. Is there anything else you would like to plug while you're here?
I mean, that was my plug. So if I get another one, I'd have to think about it.
Oh no, that's good. Sorry, I took it for you.
My
bad.
As much
no,
as you want. I think our record. Yeah. Darcy picked like 9 things. So,
oh, amazing.
No, what I would say is if you're listening to this today and if this comes out before the Kickstarter ends, that's awesome. Go to webawesome.com. It's going to bring you straight to the Kickstarter. You can get those lifetime subscription prices that are they're never going to be, you know, with inflation, with everything else, they're never going to be lower than this price. But if you're listening to this later on and you end up going to webawesome.com, and if we've not released yet, if we've not launched the final product yet, we're still going to have an early-ish backer price. So it might not be the same price, but I've been told that we're going to have still some sort of discount for those folks. And once we launch, that's, you know, the price is going to be the price. So that's my plug. You know, I've devoted years of my life to building these low-level components, and I do want to say, not necessarily plugging a product, but plugging all the folks that are out there backing us that have been cheering us on this whole time. We appreciate that. It's awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Wicked.
You're welcome. Awesome. I will give myself a pat on the back because...
Sorry, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just kind of congratulating myself for backing them and also talking about a shoelace on the show. My bad.
I forgot to tell the one hilarious story of Connor on Twitter was replied to the show that we did and about shoelace. And I was like, yeah, shoelace is a good fit because it's built on web components. And he very nicely told me, I know, I work on shoelace.
Yeah, that's my full-time job.
That's kind of what I do.
It's not the first time I did that. It was explaining to the product manager of Shopify Hydrogen what Shopify Hydrogen was. He's like, I know.
I always click that profile. Yeah, I always click that profile and be like, who is this person?
Yeah, what is
that? Yeah. What am I getting into?
All right, yeah, I feel that. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I can't wait to, one, see what WebAwesome becomes, but also use it in all my stuff because, it's fantastic. So thank you so much for your time, and I hope it continues to raise money here.
Could I plug one last thing as well? I didn't get to plug here.
Connor, plug away.
Yeah, so obviously WebAwesome, want to plug that, go check it out. But the other thing is everyone doing all the UI work. We talked about it, OpenUI, go check them out. They're doing awesome work. Egalia, they do a lot of open source work. Some of the people from there, Brian Cardell, he has like a library for working with Shadow DOM, exposing it. Luke Warlow, like everyone who has answered all the bugs that I've filed on Chromium, WebKit, whatever, like everyone doing work for the browsers, like I just want to plug them because they're awesome and they help us a lot to be able to make better things.
Sick.
All right. That's it.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Wes. Thanks, really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you guys for having us.
Later.